is the 2nd of April, and we need to get ready for exam number 3. So we're going to do a little bit of review today, finish up chapter 8. We have some calculations to do, which, hint, 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 will be very much like the calculations on the exam for chapter 6. We will not review this calculation for chapter 17 unless you want to. We'll go through a couple of them. Short essay, Scantron, formula sheets. You can bring the chapter 6 formula sheet, which is the present value tables in the back, and then the chapter 17 formula sheet with the all the different ratios that we discussed, and some of them will be on the exam. Don't forget your calculator, one page of notes. Chapter 17, calculations are due on Thursday, but they're very easy, folks. They're very easy. Some of them you just look up. Others you just find the two numbers and divide, and that's it. So any questions on those, huh? Because we're going to do chapter 8 today, but first we need a good joke. Anybody got a good joke? Hey, what do you get when you... Did I tell you what you get when you cross a rabbit with an anesthesiologist? I'll give you that one, too. But this is topical. What do you get when you cross a rabbit and an anesthesiologist? The ether bunny. Yeah, it's bad, I know. What? A do? Ah, no. After class, yes. You want politically incorrect class. You want to battle the sex of the jokes? I tell you about the guy who was sad because his wife told him he wouldn't. No, that was the other one. So anyway, this buddy's talking to his friend and says, oh, I don't know. We had a big fight, and I haven't talked to my wife in a couple of weeks, and it's not good. I told you, and his buddy said, no, that was the other one. That was the other one. She's the day ends, the month ends today. This is a different guy. He hasn't talked to his wife in about 2 weeks. And he says, you know, it's not good. And his buddy says, well, it's nothing. I haven't talked to my wife in 6 months. And the guy says, anything wrong? He says, no, I just don't want to interrupt her. He doesn't want to interrupt her because she doesn't. Yes, right. He got it. Okay, so how are we doing? Well, if it weren't for Caterpillar and Apple, we'd be doing really good. Because look, 9%, 9%, 13% for Procter & Gamble, UPS is doing well. But what is going wrong with Apple? What do you think? Do you think they're really going to become passe and people aren't going to be lining up around the block to buy their...
TV
is coming out by the end of the year, supposedly. They're going to have a watch. They probably have some glasses or who knows what's going on. Okay, well, we'll see. So I'd buy more right now, personally. Okay, so let's get started on Chapter 8. Somebody want to hit the lights for me? And I passed these out, Chapter 7 and Chapter 8. The other side, one more time. You have to go up one more time. On the right side up twice. Right side up twice. One more. I know, it's bizarre. Chapter 7 and 8 on the same paper. Just if you don't have one, take it. I accidentally made two sets of copies. So. Okay, because we are going to discuss even more silliness. I don't know if you're a Monty Python fan, but I am, and I love the Ministry of Silly Walks. It's about a publicly funded institute that discusses how to walk silly, and this is what we're going to look at. We're going to take a look at some silliness. But first, they actually put some good stuff into this chapter, which doesn't really tell us that much about investing so much as it talks about what we are as human beings. And it's nothing new. It's nothing new. Benjamin Graham figured it out, you know, back in the 30s and 40s, and then wrote The Intelligent Investor. The investor's 1930s and 40s. The investor's chief problem, and even his worst enemy, is likely to be himself. When it comes to investing, who do we mostly blame our problems on?
Everybody else.
But who's the problem normally?
Ourselves.
Exactly. We're the ones who, you know, we say, ooh, is it too late to get in?
Yep.
Yes. Ooh, is it too late to get out? So let's take a look at some investor psychology. What? So that's what I like to call it. I like to call it psychology. I use psychology on them. And what is psychology? The study of psychos? Psychology? I think so. In 1962, there was a brief recession and a sharp market downturn. Because in the 1950s, the market just went in two directions, up and way up. The president's chief economic advisor was giving a presentation to many of the political and economic leaders of the time, describing what they were doing to right the economy. One of the attendees asks, "So when is the stock market going to recover?" The advisor curtly responded, "I'm an economist, sir, not a psychiatrist." You like it? I like it. Because of the tremendous amount of money involved in the stock markets, and the capital markets, not just the stocks, much research has gone into trying to understand investor psychology. Some of the research is very revealing about who and what we are, not only as investors, but also as a species in general. There's an old saying on Wall Street, there are three factors that influence the market. Fear, greed, and greed. Greed usually, not always, greed usually wins out. Right now, we've been living through a time of much fear, still a whole lot of fear, but greed is starting to take its place. And we hear much about, as Joe was bringing that up before the class, he was saying, the markets are hitting new highs. Well, are they really? Well, yeah, they are. The Dow and the S&P 500 have hit new highs, but those highs were last hit in 2007, That was October 2007, so 5.5 years ago. Since then, inflation has devalued in somewhat, not a whole lot, but devalued the value of a dollar, and so inflation is always with us. And so are they really new highs? On an inflation-adjusted basis, they aren't. Plus, the NASDAQ won't hit its new high for many years. It hit 5,000 in the year 2000, and it's at 3,300. And when it does hit its new highs, it won't be the same. It won't be the same index because many of those companies are gone. They're gone, and that's true of all the indices. They're imperfect at best. So here are some common investor weaknesses: reading too much into the recent past. Remember, we said beware the permanent trend. That's Andrew Tobias who said that. Permanent trend. It's an oxymoron, right? It doesn't make any sense. Even though there are countless examples of investors getting on the bandwagon, just as the wagon was about to veer into a ravine, we trick ourselves into believing it's different this time. It's a new era. So, are you piling into gold and treasury bonds now? Oh, that was so last year. It's not gold anymore. What is it now? It's, I don't know, 3D printing. What? Fribarium? It's a metal, Vibranium. No, I think 3D printing is the next thing, huh? Did you buy oil in mid-2008 when it was $147 a barrel, and then 8 months later it was $39 a barrel? And how did that condo conversion flipper in early 2006 work? Oh, not so good. eToys, The Globe, CMGI. Have you ever heard of these three companies? These are just three of the companies of the internet mania in the late 1990s. There were many. Yeah.
I passed by the gas station. I don't know, Woodman, and the gas there is like 480 something. Was that what?
480?
Yeah.
That's
like a Woodman.
Where is it?
Woodman, like down by the freeway.
I don't know why he's charging that much. They're charging so much more than other
probably
people.
Invested too much when it was high.
Yeah, maybe they got a broad deal. A lot of times the
oil is way more too.
Right, and off right on some of the gas stations right on the freeway, you'll see the charge markers are right there. People getting off, going somewhere. I don't know how they get away with that. There was a gas station in Point Loma that always charged way more, and I guess they just have a certain clientele that don't care. Yeah, I guess so. Certainly, you know, that ain't me.
I'll why is it that when oil prices go up, the gas station changes their prices right away, but when they go down, it takes forever for them to fall
back down? There's an old, I won't ask it, but because they can, you know, because they can. I know, you get angry at the last person you should get angry at is the gas station owner, for the most part. Because they make very little money off the gas. Sometimes they sell it for less than what they get it for, just to keep the people coming in. What do they make the money off of?
The Twinkies.
The Twinkies, the pretzel sticks, the sodas, what? Twinkies will be back. They're not coming. Yeah, they're already back. What? Yeah.
What?
That's where they make most of their money off of.
Someone on eBay and bought this for like a big pack for like 40 bucks.
Big pack of what? Oh, Twinkies. Okay. So yeah, don't get too angry at the gas station attendant. I always, whenever people start complaining, I always go up to them and say, you know what? Gas is the cheapest thing you can put in your car. You guys are okay. And they look at you like, thank you so much, because they're always hearing so much crap from people. And I always say, it is. I don't know, that means water is cheaper, but think about it. Yeah. Milk is expensive. Okay, so don't read too much into the recent past. Misperceiving randomness. Even though stock price movements in the short term are random, our brains will trick us into seeing a pattern because we are heuristic. You like that word, heuristic?
Cool.
It means humans look for patterns. We're not deterministic or algorithmic, which like computers are. Even if we know, you know, someone's told us or we know that there's no pattern to be found, we will superimpose one. And we'll see this when we get to technical analysis. For example, if you had a series of 1 million random digits, you know, zeros through nine, 1 million, the probability that any one of the digits, you know, you don't know which one, but any one of the digits will be repeated 13 times in a row is essentially 100%. In other words, if it doesn't happen, that's probably not a randomly generated number, 1 million numbers. But if you're a human and you come along and you see 13 sevens in a row, would you think it's random?
Probably.
You would? No, you'd say, can't be random. There's 13 threes in a row or 13 fours in a row. But if we didn't see that, we would say, the statistics folks would say it's not random. So we're going to see this when we get to technical analysis a little bit later. Yeah, it takes statistics. I loved it. I took 3 semesters in my undergraduate degree is in mathematics, and I took 3 semesters of stats and just loved it. And most of the other my buddies, they hated it. You know, I didn't do well in differential equations. I did pretty poorly, but I got it. I got through it. And calculus and that. But I love statistics, and I went out into the industry and started doing some. I really enjoyed it. Being overconfident. Believing you know more than you think you know, or believing you are better than most other investors. The truth is we only see the tip of the iceberg with regard to what is happening within a company, an industry, or the economy. And we are usually only average at best, or mediocre, when we decide to become investors, especially if we decide to become traders. Now, I'm going to ask you, I want you all to vote. Are you an excellent, good, average, fair, or poor driver? So how many people are excellent? Raise your hands. Come on, I want you to be not to be worried about being too proud. Come on, raise your hands high. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, just 5? Okay, how many people are good drivers? Come on, raise your hands high. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. How many people are average? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Wait a minute, do it again. Raise your hand. Come on, you got to help me. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Were you raising your hand?
Well, I already transferred.
Okay. How many people are poor drivers? How many people, I'm sorry, fair drivers. How many people are fair drivers? And poor. Well, that's typical. I don't think all of you voted. But that's typical. What will happen is, in fact, very few people will say they're average. Over 80% of people, and if you put 100 people, over 80% of them will say they're excellent or good. Now, wait a minute. What?
That means we're overconfident.
Exactly. It means that people are overconfident. That tree just jumped right out in front of me. I don't understand what happened. And so this, the same thing is true with people when they think, oh, yeah, I'm a great investor. Yeah. It's called the Lake Wobegon effect. Ever heard of Lake Wobegon? It's made it into the language. It's a mythical place where this guy, his name is Garrison Keillor, and there he has a show called Prairie Home Companion, a radio show, if you can believe that, in this age of television. And he says, that's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average. everybody can't be above average, because then there's no average. The average would be higher. So we're overconfident. Selling our winners too soon, hanging on to our losers. It's called loss aversion. We talked about it a little bit in chapter 7. As humans, we hate to admit we made a mistake. So we stubbornly hold on to our losers, hoping that they will at least get back to where we bought them, so we can say we didn't make a mistake. The reality is that our memories are wired to forget unpleasant experiences. Sell your losers, and you will quickly forget about them. That's the way your brains are wired. Unpleasant experiences go away. Hang on to them, and every time you look at the screen or look at your statement or everything, you'll be reminded how stupid you were. You're like, oh, damn. In contrast, hanging on to the winners is what makes an investor rich. People think, oh, I need to take profits. I need to take profits. No. Hang on to them. If it's a good company, you need to stay with them. Peter Lynch. Peter Lynch was once asked, I told you this, I think, what is his worst mistake he ever made? What was the worst mistake he ever made, Mr. Lynch? He said, oh, I bought Home Depot when it first came out, and it went up 100% and I sold. And you say, that's the worst mistake you ever made? He says, yeah. It then went up 20 more times. Then he sold his winners too soon. So hang on to your winners. Now, to review, that was this investor psychology part. Now we're going to get to the silliness. Fundamental analysis is the in-depth study of the financial condition of operating results of a firm. It's a method of evaluating securities by attempting to measure the intrinsic value. What is that stock worth of a particular stock? We study everything from the overall economy, the industry, to the financial condition and management of the company. Simply put, the value of a stock is influenced by the performance of the company that issued the stock, the valuation models from Chapter 6, the financial ratio analysis from Chapter 17. Those are fundamental analysis techniques. Some of the fundamentals, the competitive position of the company, is it Costco or Walmart or Target, or is it Kmart? Don't forget the research of competitors, the composition and growth in sales and earnings, profit margins, the dynamics of company earnings, the composition and liquidity of corporate resources, the capital structure, how much debt, how much equity. But there are many, many investors who don't follow the fundamentalists. They are not fundamental analysts. They are technical analysts. This is a study of the various forces at work in the marketplace and their effect on stock prices. Those who adhere to technical analysis believe that they can predict the future price of the stock by analyzing the behavior of the stock price's history and or the overall stock market. Yes?
So people that like value.
Well, they're a little cagey. They have a technical, they call it technical, that's all they say. And they assign a number to a stock. But they don't always describe what technical indicators they use. They don't talk about support levels or resistance levels or support levels. They don't talk about 50-day moving averages. They don't talk about Bollinger Bands and all these other strange things, which we'll take a look at. But Value Line would be one of the least technical analysts. They are more fundamental. They do serious research. Are they ever right, the Value Line or the technical analyst? The technical analyst? Sure. Twice a day, a broken clock is right. Yeah, sometimes they're right. Sometimes they're wrong. A lot of times they're wrong. And these people really convince themselves. And I try my best to tell you my biases up front so you know. I think they're all wet. I think they're ridiculous. It's voodoo. And may as well be, rolling dice or the pure technicals. Now, you have to remember that it's a spectrum. Some people are somewhere in between, I'm not. I just think the technical analysts are ridiculous. I don't care about yesterday. I'm more worried about 3 years, 5 years into the future. And what they use are any one or dozens of what are called technical indicators. We'll take a look at just a couple. Simply put, the future price of a stock is influenced by factors other than the company's fundamental future outlook. So, there are some arguments in favor of this. stock prices do tend to move in tandem to the stock market as a whole. And when the market is rising, most stocks rise it. You'll hear the saying, a rising tide lifts all boats. When the market is falling, most stocks are brought down with it. But that's just supply and demand at work. When people are optimistic, they're bidding up the prices, they go up. When people are pessimistic, they go down. Repeat after me. There has never been a reliable methodology for predicting the short-term behavior of the stock market. There are many unreliable methods for predicting the short-term method of the future of the stock market, and they'll sell them to you for only $2,995, two-day seminar. Yes.
I overheard on the weekend that there's students that are in school that are above average. Their project is for some box that does mathematics equations of the stock market. And
Sure. And is it right? Sometimes, yeah.
But they usually get so big corporations or whatever could use that.
Sure.
They get it in the money.
Yeah, and the thing to do...
You can't predict the weather either.
Exactly. The thing to do would be to subject their results to statistical methods that are scientific. And whenever you do that, they just fall apart. Because they're going to be right sometimes. Sure, let's just always say that the market's going to fall. Well, eventually you're going to be right. Let's just say the market's going to go up. Eventually you're going to be right. You may be wrong, you might be right. It may stay sideways. But I love these articles. Could the market go higher? Yes, it could. Could the market crash? Yes, it could. Is it? I don't know. All I know is if the world falls apart, then, oh, well, all bets are off. But if we do well, the stock market should do well. So we'll take a look at these. And here's one of them. The momentum buying. The trend is your friend. You look for support levels that's supposedly some number below which the stock or the stock market as a whole won't go down. And you look for resistance levels. These are levels that it can't break through. And these people swear by these numbers. And they'll throw out a number like, oh yeah, this is the support level. But if it breaks that support level, oh, it's going to go down to this support level. Why? I don't know, because I just said it would. And if it breaks through this resistance level, it's going to go up to here, and that'll be the next resistance level. Why? Because, I don't know, because I said so. And so let's take a look at one of these guys. Just one of them. There are dozens and dozens of these guys, and of course they want you to sign up for $50 a month or whatever. StockMarketMentor.com. And this is for years old, but he comes out with a new one every week. But it's interesting, the newer ones are not... Would you hit the light there, Pio? The newer ones are not as specific. On the right-hand side, down twice. On the left-hand side, up all the way. Okay, I'll help you with that. Hang on. Somebody says, yeah, no, down twice. And now on the right, let's get it, go. It's
all down.
Yeah. It's low bid. Remember, everything on this campus is low bid. I would hate to be sitting on the space shuttle. We're out of commission now, but everything on that thing is low bid. But here we go.
RealMoney.com. Look, you can sit around and watch all the financial television. If you're successful trading and just buying a bunch of ticker symbols because somebody on TV says they like the company, if you want to turn mad money, fast money, and on the money into your money, you better buy these stocks, right? Now that's where I come in. My job is to look beyond the company and focus on what really matters right now, the stock. So let's get off the couch and make some trades. Today we've got a Mad Money trifecta with Cisco, Shaw Group, and Amazon. Let's get started. Cisco, 3 points to make on this. First, let's use the...
He's looking at the squiggle.
Measurement of the minimum upside of the stock until the next prolonged congestion.
There's the support level.
Take $11 down at the bottom to $28 up at the top. That's this last level of congestion in the early part of 2007. From there, we add that $11 onto the $28, which is the breakout. And what do we come up with? $39. So $39 is our target for this particular move.
He just took that, what it did before, and added to it.
The way we do that is we look and see how the prices tag these upper Bollinger Band lines all the way until here. Now, this acts as current resistance, and the next time the price gets up to that level, it really needs to push higher if this uptrend is going to remain intact. Current support is down here. It's about $1.50 below the current price level. That leads us to the last point, and that is we put a protective stop here, so we're risking about $1.50 on the downside in order to make $7.50 on the upside. That's a pretty good risk-reward profile for me. Shaw Group.
Do you understand what he did?
In fact, you make 3 points here.
Do you understand what he's doing? He's saying...
Put a load of the risk.
Yeah, that's what he wants to do. But is he doing that? What?
You can't do that.
Well, no, I mean, it's ridiculous. He's saying that this is the current resistance level right here, the support level. It's not going to go below that. Why? Because he said so.
Right.
It's not going to go below that because he said so. Of course, if it does go below that, he has a stop. Remember the stop loss?
Yeah.
Stop order? So if it goes below that, it automatically sells.
So basically, you can use your ignorance against you.
He's using his ignorance against him, in my humble opinion. He says that because the stock went from this amount to this amount before it hit what he calls congestion, an area where the stock price didn't go up or didn't go down, it went sideways. He's saying that because it went from here to here, the next time it breaks out on the upside, it's going to go from here to here, the same amount. If you did some kind of statistical analysis on this stock over the last 25 years, Cisco's been around since the 80s, you'd say, it's done that very rarely. It goes up, sure, then it goes back down, then it goes up, then it goes back down, and there's no rhyme or reason unless we put it there. But even if there were, there's no guarantee it's going to happen in the future. And so he's saying that he believes it's going to go from 32 to 39 because it went from 29 or whatever, 19 to 32, because it went up 11 points, and 20 to 32. It's going to do it again. Do you believe him? For the record, it went down over the last few weeks from that. So, okay, they talk about psychological barriers. The Dow 13,000, 15,000, the S&P 1500. The high in 2007 was 1560. It just broke through that. $100 for a stock. They use what are called moving averages. They watch the average, not the individual. Well, they look at the different individual stock prices, but then they say, let's go back 50 days. Let's go back 15 days. Let's go back 200 days. And that's the assignment that we'll take a look at on for Chapter 8. It's a bonus assignment. You have to basically act like you know what you're doing. And all you have to do is not, you don't have to know what you're doing, you just have to convince me, act like you know what you're doing. And what am I going to say? You don't know what you're doing?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter, you still get it right. So let's show you how to do it. What? Pay me 50 bucks a month. Don't pay me 50 bucks a month. So let's look at a stock. Let's look at, what did I use? Did I use Google? What did I use? Look at the fun sheet. No, I didn't use Google. I did use Google. Then I did use Google. Okay, so look at the Google. I thought I used Google. All right, so now, this is just one of many sites that allow you to do technical analysis. So you come over here, and it says basic technical analysis. Again, this is all free. If you want the really good, you have to pay $100 or $50 a month. So this is the stock price over the last, 1 year? Let's take a look at 5 years. So you got, see that, 5 years? With me? Watch what's going on. 5 years. And this is what Google's done over the last 5 years. That's when the downturn, the turmoil was in 2008 and 2009. And what we're going to do is we're going to superimpose that a 50-day moving average. So what we're looking at now is the computer goes back every day 50 days. It goes back 50 days and averages the prices over the last 50 days. And then as it goes to the next day, it goes back 50 days. And then it goes back another day, it goes back 50 days. That's why it's called a moving average. Do you understand? Nod your head. Yes or go. I don't know what the hell you're talking about. It's finding the moving average. Every day, the computer goes back 50 days and finds the average for the last 50 days. And then the next day, it does the next 50 days. And what that does is it smooths out the individual day-to-day variations. You see? What we're going to do then is take a look at the 200-day moving average. And if we hit the 200-day moving average on top of the 50-day moving average, now we see that the red line is going back 200 days. So that smooths it out even more. Are you with me? And so what we're looking for are times when the 50-day goes above the 200-day, because that means that the prices are rising. If the 50, and that's supposed to be a good sign. So here, when the 50-day went over the 200-day, was that a good time to buy? Yeah, it turned out to be. If the 50-day goes below the 200-day moving average, that's supposed to be a good time to sell. They call this the golden cross. They call this the death cross. Believe it or not. Now, this was a good time to buy, wasn't it? When the 50-day went below the 200-day, was that a good time to sell? No, it was too late. You should have sold back here. Because now Google went sideways and then came back up. And by the time the 50-day had gone above the 200-day, you had already missed the pop. Are you with me?
Yeah, don't wait. Bye.
So, then you should have been looking at the 15-day and the 50-day. You should have shortened your time horizon. Well, would you tell me which one you're going to use, the 50 and the 200, or the 15 and the 50? You see, because they also show you the 5-day, the 20-day, the 100-day. And then over here, it went below. It was already too late. It went above. It went below. It went above. You tell me when's a good time. So sometimes these technical things work, and the person goes, yippee, yippee, yippee. And other times it doesn't work. It's all because of something else. Yeah. Are you with? You understand? It's no, if you want to buy Google for the next 3 to 5 years, that's what I would do. If you want to buy Google for the next 3 to 5 weeks, good luck. I can't help it. Maybe these people can. But that's your assignment if you are interested in doing it. It is totally optional. And again, you don't have to know what you're doing. All you have to do is try to convince me you know what you're doing. No, it's not. Just, what do you see some of the verbiage? Hang on a minute. You just got to act like a pompous ignoramus and people will believe you. The Delta. This is the one that some people have tried to explain to me. I still can't figure it out. It's one of the more historically popular price movement technical theories. It uses the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the Transport Average. Tries to identify three forces, a primary direction or trend, a secondary direction or trend, and daily fluctuations. By watching the changes in the primary and secondary directions of the indices, you are supposed to be able to determine the overall direction of the market. And no one's been able to explain it to me. This is a primary trend that is either bullish or bearish. In this case, it is bearish. But here are the secondary trends, going up and down, and reversions to the primary trend. In other words, the market goes up and down. I think that's what you're saying. You know what I mean? Do you think that's so? I don't know. If you can figure it out, explain it to me, because I can't figure it out. And the relative strength. Now, Value Line likes this one. They use relative strength, Investor's Business Daily. This is a measure of one investment relative to other for the market as a whole. I would be more interested in this if I could take the relative strength against their competitors. But as a market as a whole, I'm not so interested in it. Market volume, personally, that's up to you. You decide. Market volume is supposedly a measure of what's going to happen. If there's heavy volume, meaning lots of shares being traded, and the market is rising, ooh, that's a good sign. If there's low volume but prices are falling, well, that's okay. It's okay. There's just low volume. Prices are falling, you're losing money, but that's okay. It's low volume. But if it's heavy volume with prices falling, well, that's bad. Because that means everybody trying to sell. Well, wait a minute. Is that a bad sign? Is it really that bad that everyone's trying to sell? No! It means you get to buy more at a better price. Unless the whole world falls apart, in which case, all bets are off. And then low volume with prices rising. Okay, yeah, prices are rising, but it's low volume, so don't be too excited. What do you think? Do you understand why? I told you right at the front. I think these people are all... I'm not trying to tell you because I believe it. I'm trying to tell you because this is what that's what you're going to see out there. People are going to say, oh yeah, well, it's heavy volume, but prices are going up. That's a good sign. The breath, not this breath, but the other breath. How many stocks are going up? How many stocks are going down? It's called the advanced decline ratio. If people are bullish, there should be more stocks going up than stocks going down. If investors are bearish, there should be more going down than going up. And so you'll read or you'll hear in the news, the advanced decline ratio was particularly bullish at 3-1. For every 3 issues going up, there was 1 going down. And then the tick. Do you remember when we did our market simulation? The tick is the price going up. That's an uptick. Is the price going down? That's a downtick. And if it stays the same, that the tick isn't changed. It's going sideways. And so they'll say there was decidedly bearish tick with most stocks going down at the end of the day, or a bullish tick, lots of stocks were going up. Short interest. Now this is interesting because of market dynamics. We're going to discuss short selling in detail at the end of the semester. All, do you remember what a short sell is? What are we trying to do? It might be a question. I don't remember. It was on the chapter 5. Short sale is when you want the price to do what? Everyone should say go down. Short sale is when you want the price to go down. You're betting the price is going to go down. Normally you're betting the price is going to go up. That's called long. When you guys say, how can somebody go to sleep on that? Turn the lights back up. So when a stock is sold short, the person who sold it short is hoping the price it goes down. Price goes down. And for some reason, short investors are somehow considered more sophisticated. And are they supposed to know, they're supposed to know that the market will fall because they're short sellers. They're more sophisticated. I know one guy who's a short seller, and I don't think he's very sophisticated. The problem with short selling is you can lose a lot of money fast, much faster than the other way around. You see, you want to buy low, sell high, right? Right? Well, these people, they want to sell high, buy low. They want to do it the other way around. Doesn't matter. You can do it either way. You can buy low, sell high, or you can buy high, sell low. Sell high, buy low. You can do it in reverse order. The problem is you can make a lot of, you're going to lose a lot of money quickly. And suppose, what?
You want to buy low, sell high?
That's the normal way of doing it. High, buy low. No. It's the same thing. You're trying to make money, but in one, you're buying low, waiting for the price to go up, and then selling high. In the other one, you're selling high, and then waiting for the price to go down, and then buying low. It's just how you... It's in what order. The only difference is what order. And how it's done. Because it's done... It's a very sophisticated technique for... They use the word sophisticated. I think it's stupid. I don't want to do it. Peter Lynch says don't sell short. That's good enough for me. And Peter Lynch says it, I don't do it. Okay, so when a large number of investors sell short, that's a sign that the market's going to fall. That's a bad sign. Everybody should run away. But when there's a number of investors that have sold short, when you sell short, you have to buy it back. And so it's like a compressed spring. And this is what you will see so many times. You'll see the market just go like this. And you'll say, what happened? Well, there's a ton of people selling short. That presses the price down. But then they got to buy it back. And so what you see is that. It goes right back up again. And so when people get, oh, the market's falling, it's like, a couple of days, it'll come back up. And they go, how'd you know that? They got them. If they sell short, they have to buy back. They have to buy it back up. And when you buy low, you can wait forever to sell it, sell high. But when you sell high, you have to buy it back, and usually they don't wait forever, because if they do, they lose their shirts. They lose a lot of money. So the amount of short interest is like a compressed spring. Eventually, that's what they call it. They call it a short squeeze, and the price will rise back up. Am I confusing you? My apologies. I'm sorry. What would you rather do?
Keep going.
Buy low, sell. I like that. Odd lot trading. This has been basically gotten rid of by technology. But the idea was the best thing to do is the opposite of what small investors are doing. And supposedly small investors would buy odd lots, less than 100 shares. What's an odd lot? 100 shares or an increment of 100 shares. And if odd lot trading rises, it supposedly means that more and more small investors are entering the market, which supposedly means that small investors are notorious for getting in the market at the top, and so you should run away. But the research and data behind this are suspect, plus technology has made odd lot trading commonplace, so I don't give any credence to this. Now, what about contrarians? We've talked about contrarians, haven't we? You try to do the opposite of what's going on. The theory is that if people are very optimistic, that's a predictor of falling prices. And if people are very pessimistic, that's a predictor of rising prices. So we should all walk around like this. Ooh, the market's going to fall, the market's going to fall, and that'll make it rise, right? According to this theory, yeah. We've covered this before, and it's actually a pretty good thing to do. It's just difficult. It's very difficult. You have to be willing to wait on your hands and have
Warren Buffett, right?
That's the Warren Buffett type of wait on your hands until the whole world falls apart, and then you go, okay, I'll swoop in and buy it. But can most of us do that?
No.
Most of us don't have that kind of resources. Yeah, most of us aren't Warren Buffett and other contrarians. No, oh no. He started out with his goal in life was to be a successful investor. He didn't start out rich, and he went and studied under Benjamin Graham and became very fabulously wealthy. Congratulations.
Yeah, good for him.
Charting. Now, we've already seen a couple of charts. We saw the couple of the Dow, we saw the stock market mentor. This is the activity of charting price behavior and other market information, and then using the patterns these charts form to make investment decisions. High, low, close charts, candlestick charts, and then the very popular resistance and support levels, head and shoulders, triangles, flag and pennant, cup and saucer. I don't know what all these things mean, but here are the high, low, and close. See, it started here. This is what it started at, the open. The high was here, the low is here, and this is what it closed at. And if it's red, that means it closed below what it started. And then here, it started here, the high was up here, the bottom, the low was here, and it closed here, so that's black. And by watching these things, you're supposed to be able to come up with, you know, what's going to happen in the future. I think it's Bjorsk, but that's what they do. A candlestick, you know, if it closes higher than what it opens, that's good, that's a clear. If it's black, that's bad. And so here are some dangerous patterns. A dark cloud cover, or a bearish engulfing pattern, or harami, which supposedly is a Japanese word that means bad. I don't know. Are you going to use this to trade, folks? Well, fine though. It just means there wasn't that much variation that day. But it closed lower than what it opened. This day, it opened higher than what it closed, so that's a good sign. And if it closes lower than when it opened, that's a bad sign. Now, this is the only one technical analysis thing that I was asked on the Series 7. That's the head and shoulders. Doesn't it look like head and shoulders? That's bad. That's really bad. I don't know why, but it's bad. And they asked you on the series, at least they asked me on the Series 7, one of the more popular technical trading patterns in technical analysis charting is, and that was it, head and shoulders. And then here you are. Here's the resistance level. It goes up here, falls back down, goes up here, falls back down, and it's having a hard time breaking out of the pattern. Here's the support level. It goes back down, hits it, and people buy. It goes back up. They hit it down. They buy. You understand? Do you? Explain it to me. Here's another support line, but this time it broke out on the downside. That's bad. In other words, you lost money. Oh, well. Here are triangles, and supposedly those are bad, but flags are okay, and pennants are really cool. Pennants are supposed to be really cool. And all I can say is good luck. And there are people who will charge you $2,995 for 2 days and teach you how to read these things. And are you with me? Yeah? This is what you're going to tell me on the bonus assignment. The market's rise after a period of reaccumulation is a bullish sign. Nonetheless, the fulcrum characteristics are not yet clearly present and a resistance area exists 40 points higher in the Dow. Resistance. It is clearly premature to say the next leg of the bull market is up. If, in the coming weeks, a test of the lows holds and the market breaks out of its flag, a further rise would be indicated. Should the lows be violated, a continuation of the intermediate term trend, downward trend, is called for. In view of the current popular situation, it is a distinct possibility that traders will sit in the wings awaiting a clear delineation of the trend, and the market will move in a narrow trading range. Do you understand what he said?
No.
Okay, I think he said, if the market does not go up or down, it'll go sideways. I think that's what he said, you know. And this is true. This is what somebody who's making $500,000 on Wall Street with big bonuses said to their clients, and it got into a random walk down Wall Street, the book.
I think what he means is if people really believe this, then it should go up. You know, like,
yeah, right. If you believe it, I'm going to make a lot of money. So that's all you have to do in the chapter assignment is just write something like that, gobbledygook. Yes, the 50-day moving average went above the 200-day moving average, which was a phenomenal time to buy. But the second time when it went below the average, it was a terrible time to buy because of reaccumulation of the current flag pattern. And yes. No, I'll give you 10 points. Yeah, I ain't giving you any money. So here is where I really think these people have got it all screwed up. Because we are humans. And this, I know, well, that's it, I know I'm a big statistics fan. And so what I did is created a randomly generated 1 year stock price statistics. It's randomly generated, folks. It's not real. It's based on reality because this is what they look like using inverse cumulative distribution functions, which you don't know what they are, but you don't have to worry about that. They're used in simulation. And the cool thing about this is all you have to do is press function key 9, and it will recalculate. Ding, 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 boop, boop, boop. And if you do this long enough, you're going to start to see those head and shoulders and those flags and those pennants and those cup and saucers or whatever they are. But if you do it long enough, what do you start to see? Anybody work in the Navy with oscilloscopes? No? What is that called? White noise. You just start to see random patterns that eventually don't mean anything. It's just white noise, it's called. Are you with me? Understand? Nod your head yes. Or go no. No? If you don't understand, no. Just ask. So in other words, this is what I believe these people are guilty of. They fool themselves into thinking there's a pattern, even though the statistics tell us in the short term the stock market is random. People are not rational. However, if you buy their stuff and you do well, congratulations. Tell me how it works out. Now, last slide on stock. Who wants to get into the industry? Huh? Who wants to get in the industry? Anybody? Just a couple of people? All right. Well, here you go. This slide should be familiar because we already went through this. What do you guys do? Take the Series 7. That's right. The Series 7. Well, no, wait a minute. I know I'm not a big fan of insurance. We secure insurance in the other class. And we'll get to annuities here. We'll have a couple slides on annuities. But no. It's actually a very... you wouldn't believe I just heard another bad, very bad. How many? Two more?
One.
Just one? Okay. Okay. Gilbert, how many you got? Okay, one more? Okay. I just heard a really bad thing and not good. Not good, not good. Oh, it's hard. Want to hit the lights, Theo, on the right hand side, up twice? Okay. So, yeah. So, Series 7, you got to be sponsored by a brokerage firm. Many brokerage firms are sponsoring new recruits, and they want bilingual, they want women, they like ex-military. Go for it. And that is it, folks. We are done stocks. We are done stocks. What do you think? You want to see another little video?
Sure.
This is Yahoo's... Where is it? Where did it go? Learn to be a trader in 3 days. Learn to be a trader in 3 days. What is it? Limited time. Who should attend? It was only $1,495. What a deal! 3 days. I mean, that's pretty cheap, folks. 3 days, $1,300. You have to go to Plano, Texas. How about Traders Boot Camp? This one is, look at that. Look at that. Expect your fundamental assumptions and perceptions about trading to be challenged deeply. It's normally $7,900. For you, only $6,900. You save $1,000 in Colorado Springs. You want to go?
No.
3 days. You'll learn to be a trader and make tons of money, and it'll pay for yourself. And now here is a guy on Yahoo. His name is... hit the lights again. And he's going to tell you why the last resistance...
sharplab.com. So what are your assessment pieces? So a little tippy-toppy flip to chip.
Yeah. You know, we've had, if you look at the last 16 weeks, we've had a 220-point rally. Just an incredible acceleration, right? If I were to wake up today and you were to show me the S&P chart, the daily chart, with the moving average lines, not knowing even what I'm looking at, whether it's an individual stock or S&P, I would say this is a bullish chart, right? We've got a big popping action in the last 2 days. There's been some warning signs here.
Is this great support level and then support?
You don't want everybody to die.
Nothing can be in a straight line,
right?
The thing is, though, as you and I talked about off set, you've got these historical highs that we're butting up against, right? The 2007 historical high. You combine that
2007,
with the last 2008
and 9.
And there is a warning sign. However, I don't know if it's a sell signal, but I'll tell you
warning sign.
Points to look at this juncture. If the market starts to break down below 1535 on cash, which is only about 10 points.
1535. What is that?
You could start
a number.
Moving average line south. You can start to put in an intermediate top here. If that thing starts to mushroom, I don't want to continue doing the but if you go down to a 200-day moving average line, not change the overall four-year trend, and go all the way back down to 1440.
Go all the way back down to 1440. Why? Because I said so.
Cautious. I don't really start to turn negative unless we start to close, not intraday, but close below that 1535 level.
Why? That's 500 different companies in the S&P 500. Why? What does 1535 have to do with all the companies in the S&P 500? This is consolidation.
For me, if you're getting below 1535 on close, okay, there's going to be a margin of maybe 7 or 8 points there. There's going to be that cushion of
1%.
About 0.5% is right. Okay, you start to break below that, and then you've got confirmation. Remember, next week we've got some holidays. It should be a little bit slow for that. But the one that you've been sneaking on, so
I'd
watch out for that as well.
Let's talk about the upside. Now, these triple pops that you had 6 years ago, okay, 10 years ago or something.
Right.
Folks, look at that. That aren't very market stories. You think that's just bogus.
Right.
But and the veterans get all tweaky about that. Where do we break through? What level would give the sense that, man, we've got nothing but clear gains in front of us because we have big...
It's an excellent question because what I've been watching in the media over the last couple of weeks is that they keep talking about the top being around that 1565, 1560 cents. On a continuation pattern, the high was actually 1576 back in 07. And I'm befuddled as to why they're discounting at 10 points. Probably because it's a future continuation pattern.
So these people are paid tremendous sums of money to look at the squiggles on the line and tell you, oh, if it goes below this line, oh, that's a bad sign. You better get out. If it goes above this line, that's a good number. It's time to get in. If you want to believe it, go right ahead. But I think it's garbage. They've got a nice suit. What?
You're paid to lie.
You're paid to... I wouldn't use the word lie. To act like you know what you're talking about. Your prediction, right? It's just a prediction, remember, it's just a prediction. Exactly. And some people have said, well, here's a great idea. Why don't I just find about 100 clients and tell half of them to buy because the market's gone up, and tell the other half to sell because the market's going to go down. Right? Well, 50 of them are going to think I'm a genius. And the other 50 I'll probably lose. And then of the other 50, I'll take half of them and tell them the market's going to go up and tell them the market's going to go down. And then half of them will think I'm a genius. The other half will think I'm a goofball and they'll get rid of me. Are you with me? You understand? Eventually. What? Yeah. Yeah, but it's going to unravel pretty quickly. Yeah, one of them. After that, when you're all done, one of them will be rich. The rest will think you're a jerk. Theoretically, exactly. But, okay, so I hope I haven't biased you too much against this, because I think it's ridiculous, but I want you to... What? I think so. You know, it's worked for me. It doesn't mean it worked for you. It doesn't mean it won't work for you. It hasn't worked for me at times, but I don't know. You tell me, because I think it's ridiculous. I really do. I think it's it's ridiculous. But there's an awful lot of people who believe it, and they make a lot of money off of it by teaching you $6,990 for a 3-day seminar in Colorado Springs, Colorado. It's a nice place. Go visit. All right, back to fundamental analysis. So, have you ever heard of Colgate?
Yeah.
Palmolive? What do they make?
Soap,
toothpaste. They make women's things too, right? Palmolive. I don't know. Creams and stuff. Yeah. So. Forget Cisco. Forget Apple. Forget Google. Let's go buy a company that sells toothpaste. And what are they selling for? Yeah. Not the toothpaste, the stock. $118,000. All right. And they've been raising their dividends consistently at approximately what percentage? 8% per year. The dividends for the next 3 years are expected to be $2.72, $2.94, and $3.18. Value Line expects, or forecasts, the price per share to be approximately $150 at the end of 2015. If we desire a rate of return of 10%, using any appropriate dividend discount models, would we consider this a good investment? So... Which ones do we use? Or which one? Or which ones? Which one do you want to use? The discounted cash flow, but we could also use the constant perpetual. They've been raising their dividends consistently. Are you with me? So here's a combination one. Or go, no, I don't know. What the hell are you talking about, Fiano? So, who can tell me what to do? Who wants to work on this one, huh? You want to work on it yourselves for 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why don't you work on it on yourself, on your own, see if you can do the constant perpetual, because all the data is there that you need, and the discounted cash flow dividend earnings model. No? No? Do you have your worksheet? Okay. See, this is why I wonder. Am I getting through? I guess not. Who needs the formula sheet for chapter 6? Present value tables? Do you have the present value tables? William, do you have yours? Okay. I'll write down the formulas, okay? I'll leave that there. Annual dividend. Hope you had a great spring break, right? You studied all week?
Yeah.
Did you see what I did on the website?
I was a busy beaver. I was busy. My wife said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I gotta get ahead." Not the whole week. We had out-of-town guests come on Friday. And, that, well, there's two of them here, aren't there? There are two of them hiding in this one. Both of them, I believe. No, I want everybody else to get too. I want everybody to get it. I can do them for you. Nathan. Jose Avila. Mike Boyd, Natalia, Kristen Alvarez. Kristen Alvarez is not here. Richter and Eduardo Medina. Okay, ready? Almost?
Not yet.
Not yet?
Come on. Okay.
Okay, one more minute. What? The first one, we're getting $2.72, and they've been growing that at about 8%. It's actually slowed down a little bit, but let's say 8%. So take the annual dividend times 1 plus the growth rate, 2.72 times 1.08 is 128. $2.72 times 1.08.
2.937.
937, close enough. And divide that by 10% minus the 8%, the required rate of return minus the required the dividend growth rate of 10% minus 8%, 2%. And what's the number? Can I start over again? Let's go. No, that's what they're paying right now. They're paying us dividends now, $2.72. That's what the annual dividends are. But what have they been doing with their dividends? Everyone should say growing them or increasing them. What have they been doing with their dividends? It says they've been consistently growing their dividends at 8%, right? Okay. So you multiply the $2.72 times 1 plus the growth rate, 1.08, and what do you get? Where's your calculator? Come on, do it, do it, do it. You got to do it on Thursday. I can't do it for you. All right, and then you divide that by the required rate of return minus the growth rate. And so 10% minus 8% is? So 2.937 divided by 0.02? 146.88. What's the current price? 118. Not bad. Now, that was the... You got to do that. Do that. We've done that several times. Do it again. Do it again. Do it again until you're sick of it. Now, this one is the discounted cash flow dividends earnings model. We believe that we're going to get $2.72. Well, that's what they're paying this year. They've been increasing it every year, so we expect at 8%, 2.94, and then the next year, $3.18. And that's what Value Line told us. And Value Line told us at the end of 2015, we expect the price to be about $150. So we write down those cash flows, and we're looking for 10% rate of growth, 10% required rate of return. So you go to the present value table. Did you do that? You see 0.909? Did I do it right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, multiply $2.72 times 0.909. What do you get? 2.472, 294 times 0.826,
2.428.
Now, what you do is you add the two together. It makes life easier. So 153.18 times 0.751, 0.038. Add those three up, and what do we get?
119.94
or so. Close enough. So not bad, huh? You'd be happy with 10%? Alright. Yeah, we think it's worth 119 from this model. This model is telling us it's worth a whole lot more. Yeah, well, I asked you to do, I said, which appropriate models? I hope you would. Yeah. And well, I'll ask you. I'll say which one is appropriate.
So what if it's not really appropriate, but
you did it anyway?
Right.
If it's right, but it's not appropriate.
It's not like appropriate, but it's different ones that
you can. Yeah. Yeah. Well, would we use the zero growth model for this? No, because they've been growing their dividend. That's, I'm not trying to understand the question. Would you use the zero growth model for this?
No.
They said no. Why do you say no?
I didn't say no.
Okay. Would we use the zero growth model for this?
No.
No, because they have been growing their dividends.
Because
what?
When they have been growing their dividends, you don't want to use the zero
front. What do you think? Say again?
We have the dividends.
We have dividends, and it says...
You don't use the zero front.
Well, if you have dividends and they're consistent, they're not growing... They're constant, not growth. They're like a utility. A utility doesn't really raise their dividends fast.
That's when we use a zero growth model. Make sense? Well, this one, they're consistently growing their dividends at 8%. So which model should you use? The constant growth, constant perpetual growth model. What a stupid name. That's the, it has a couple different names, but the discounted cash flow model, dividends earnings model, dividend discount model. And then, where do you get the PVN?
Okay, got it.
Where do you get the PVNs?
From the chart.
From the chart, right. Okay, now next one. Amgen, have you heard about them? Yeah, they're a very large biotechnology firm. And their recent price has been around $102. The company started paying dividends in 2011. Why? Because they're no longer a startup growth company. They're now mature, and it's time for them to start distributing the earnings to the shareholders. And they started paying dividends in 2011 and have raised the dividend They raised the dividend very radically from $1.12 to $1.88. Our estimate for the price in 4 years is $175 per share. So they started at $1.12 in 2011, went up to $1.44 in 2012, and now in 2013 they're up to $1.88. That's what their dividends rate are now. And now we believe in 4 years the stock price is going to go to $175. So, what would you do? You want to use the price models? Don't use the price models. Forget the price models. Alright, so this is a little tricky, isn't it? I won't do this on the exam, folks. Don't worry. But normally what we did so far is we just said, okay, this is what we're going to assume is going to happen in the future. But this is what happened in the past. They went from $1.12 to $1.88 in 2 years, from 2011, 2012, 2013. You think that's going to happen again? You think they're going to do that again? What kind of growth rate is that? That's a huge growth rate. Let's look at the growth rate. Does anybody know how to calculate the growth rate? From chapter 6? On the bonus assignment? Nobody did the bonus assignment. Forget it. Okay. You take the current year minus the last year, and you divide it by the last year. So look at the growth rate from 2011-2012. $1.44 minus $1.12 divided by $1.12. Okay, $1.44 minus $1.12. Come on, do it. You got the calculator. Get your damn calculators out.
I was going to say the current year.
Yeah, look at 2012. We're looking at the difference between what we're doing is we're looking at what happened between 2011 and 2012. Okay, so $1.44 for 2012 minus what it was for 2011, $1.12, divided by $1.12. So what's that? That's 32 cents. No, 32 cents divided by. They raised the dividend 44%. You understand?
I got 0.28.
Did you get it?
0.28.
I'm sorry. Someone said 44%. Okay, give me a break. Okay. What is 0.32 divided by 1.12? You guys got the calculator. 0.28. They raised the dividend 28% between 2011 and 2012. Now, you guys go, wrong year. Let's do 2013 minus 2012 divided by 2012. So 2013 is $1.88 minus 2012, $1.44 divided by 2012, $1.44. So that's what? 0.44 cents divided by 1.44?
30%.
They raised the dividend 30%. Is that realistic for them to continue? Well, we haven't looked at their balance sheet, have we? We don't know what kind of cash. We haven't looked at their income statement. But what would you do with that kind of growth rate?
call in.
Would you say it's going to continue?
No.
Would you temper it? Would you lower it?
You guys are looking at me.
Think about this one.
Yeah.
I won't give you a problem like this. But I would make sure I could do number one. I would make sure I could do both for number one. Plus the chapter 17, make sure you bring the formula sheet for chapter 17. Yes?
All right, so I have a question on who gives you the estimate for the process?
Well, I'd go check Value Line. And then you might come up with somebody else's estimate, or you might come up with your own estimate.
So it differs.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thursday, study hard. Shine. Come on. Do a great job. I got the people who snuck in late. Make sure you can do problem number one. I got you. Yes, chapter 17. Who needs chapter 17? I'll have some extras. Here's chapter 17. Wait. Here's chapter 17. And here's... No, that's it. That's the first chapter 17. Yes. Yes, I got you. And good at all. It's the one with the financial ratio analysis. Okay. Yeah, we'll take it again. I got extras. Oops. Yes. But what do you need? You need that one. Okay. I got you, Jose. I want you to.
I'm confused.
Okay. Stop.